Now we're on page 281, aren't we? And the great topic of the one ego of us all. The infinite individuality of this ego is the infinite indivisibility of the one being, the one mind, the one spirit, the one soul, which is reflected in individual spiritual man and things. So, in order to begin to experience this, at the bottom of the page there, the old belief has got to be cast out, or this new idea will be spilled. It's got to be inspired, this idea, and it is, of course, inspired and inspiring us. So the great idea now is that indivisibility, the indivisibility of everything with everything, alone gives the true idea of individuality. And if we turn over to page 282, we'll see that the contrast between what individuality truly is in this sense and the mortal sense of individuality is likened to these two figures of a circle or sphere on the one hand and a straight line on the other. The sphere represents good, the self-existent and eternal individuality. That's individuality, this unbroken, unbreakable, unitary sphere in which all is one, everything is one. That's individuality or mind, whereas the other, the straight line, is a belief in a self-made, temporary, material existence, and at no point can these opposites mingle or unite. And at the bottom of the page, a tremendous topic, so absolutely basic to the chapter as a whole, comes up, and it is that this is truth. This indivisibility of everything is truth, which is not inverted. It's not inverted into that false sense of individuality, which is just mortal and personal. Truth, the individuality of truth, isn't inverted. And therefore, what must come into operation in the science of being is the rule of inversion itself. This is divine metaphysics with its rule of inversion, because it will infer from error its opposite, truth. It will infer from this belief of a fallen man, error, the truth of the womanhood of man, which is man forever unfallen, through the rule of inversion. Now, says the text, let's take a marvelous example of this. Come over to 283 and line 4, because this mind that we're talking about is the source of all movement. And inertia, which would be this fallen sense of man, this Adam man, he's inert, would claim to retard or check the perpetual and harmonious action of mind. Now, inertia, what an interesting concept that is, because it's the tendency of a body to preserve its state of rest, or its uniform motion in a straight line. It absolutely, look at fallen man, look at mortal man, he absolutely resists up to the hilt being jerked out of his preconceived and accustomed ways of thinking and living. He likes to rest in it, don't you dare jerk me out of it, and if I'm moving forward in a certain way of behavior, don't you dare jerk me out of it. And of course the present state of affairs in the world today is just jerking mortal man out of his accustomed ways of thinking and living. Now, the marvelous thing is that we must use the rule of inversion in this. And it is that mind, on line 6, is the same life, love, and wisdom yesterday and today and forever. Now, how about that? Mind is the same life. It's always in action. It's always a state of action. Mind is the same love. It's always at rest. And that's wisdom. Never to allow itself to be jerked out of its rest or out of its action, which are not two things, but are one thing. The same yesterday, today, and forever. Because this mind, being principle, is absolute, says the text on line 11. Principle is absolute. That means to say that there's no outside to it. Therefore, there are no forces coming from outside it that can impinge upon it and disturb either its state of rest or its state of activity. Therefore, mind, under the rule of inversion, gives the true idea of inertia. And the evidence before the senses is just been reversed by divine metaphysics in that case. Isn't that something? You see, on the other hand, in this state of inertia of matter and mortal mind, sin, sickness, and death are states of mortal mind which act, that sin that acts, and then that action reacts on the body as sickness, and then come to a stop, death. Not so in the action of mind, the source of all movement, the source of all life and action. No outside forces impinging upon the simultaneity of its being at rest and in action. Why is it at rest? Because it's all infinite, and you can't use it up. Can't use up the action. Therefore, it's at rest, in action. But how different from what physics would mean by inertia until the rule of inversion inverts it. And you come down that page to the spiritual structure, the only other place than in the glossary where it's the structure of truth and love that you get this word used positively and beautifully positively here, because it's a question not of the structural life of a tree or of material man, but of what really constitutes life on line 21. What really constitutes life? Little L. Well, says the text, I'll tell you what really constitutes life, little L, life, capital L. That's what constitutes life. And you get the spiritual structure of life. Because the divine principle or life has got to be demonstrated as it was by the patriarchs. But it won't be unless its science is accurately stated. We must not be guilty of using terms incorrectly. We've got a textbook which uses terms and states science correctly. Let us find out how the textbook uses its own terms in order to state its own science correctly. And then this divine principle or life will be demonstrated practically in length of days. That's the text at this point. And this is done as we receive the divine principle in the understanding and live it in daily life. So the daily life becomes the spiritual structure of being, of consciousness. This is what spiritual structure is, daily life. And daily life is it which states the science accurately and nothing else. All the talking in the world won't state the science accurately, but daily life, lived according to principle, states the science accurately. And it's returns at the top of 284 to this fact, therefore, of mind. The chapter will never let go of the term mind because it's the basis of it, the science of mind. Mind never limited. Infinite mind can have no starting point, can return to no limits, can never be in bonds. The material senses will say it's in bonds, but you see, can the material senses on line 16, which receive no direct evidence of spirit, give correct testimony as to spiritual, look at them uncapitalized, life, truth, and love? No, but we've already learned that spirit is capitalized. Life, truth, and love, and that alone can give correct testimony as to uncapitalized life, truth, and love. Uncapitalized life, truth, and love find, what did it say over the page there, find their reality in capitalized life, in God, life, truth, love. And so as we come down that page, thought is seen always, the intercommunication, line 31, is always from God to his idea man. It's always coming from the capitalized to the uncapitalized. That's the flow. That's the way round. That's the order of the science of being, absolutely. Where like is always producing like, that's the law. And never does the report go from material body to mind, but from mind to mind's own body. See that? From mind, that's God, to mind's own infinite embodiment, which is man. That's the order of the intercommunication. And therefore it is that at the top of 285, man's individuality back into the text again, and it's going to come and come and come as the chapter progresses. His individuality is his indivisibility from God. This is the science of his being. This is the science of our being, that our individuality is determined by our indivisibility from the infinite. This is the science of our being, and it's the great fact of being. It's the here and the now of being, the great fact of being for time and eternity. Therefore, on line 7, this material personality isn't individuality at all. It's counterfeit. It's the unlikeness. If the material personality were individuality, then God, on line 15, would be a physical personality. And mortals would be as gods. But spirit is not physical. So we cannot go on interpreting God as a corporeal savior. All this personal sense of individuality. No. God is a saving principle. And that saving principle is divine love. And therefore, in Christian Science, what we are seeking to do is to learn from principle how to demonstrate Christ, truth. It's Christ's truth that is the power to be this truth, to be this Christ, to be this power in action as the saving power. now over to 286, because you see this Christ as manifested by Jesus says, you can't come to the principle except by me. And what am I as Christ? I'm the very expression of the principle. I'm life, truth, and love. You can't come to the principle except by life, truth, and love. The only thing that comes to the principle is what the principle is. And what it is life, truth, and love. Therefore, only life, truth, and love comes to the principle. Therefore, you must find yourself, man, to be in and of Christ, life, truth, and love, in order to come out from the principle and return to the principle, as was the case with this original man, Jesus. He knew what origin was in principle, and he knew that all there was to him was Christ, life, truth, and love, the way out from the principle, the way back to the principle, never leaving the principle. So that the teaching of the chapter becomes this absolute indivisibility of what is meant by God, what is meant by man. You see, on line 16 there, the term good, for example, uncapitalized, is God. God is good. But at the same time, what God makes is good. So God and man, the term that defines this absolute unity of God and man, is the term good. That's what good is. And nothing is good but that. Good in principle, good in idea. And down onto line 21, God's thoughts. How extraordinary that God's thought, the thoughts come in again, are substance. God's thoughts, this that flows from God to man, from the capitalized to the uncapitalized and back to the capitalized, these thoughts are life itself. God is God's thoughts. What the text is saying there, if we examine it carefully. God's thoughts are God, life itself, in contrast to transitory thoughts which involve error and therefore are departures from truth. But you see, as we turn over to 287, error is not really a departure from truth. Error, which is fallen man, was never part of truth, ever to have departed from truth. The only thing that is part of truth, capital, is truth uncapitalized, which can never fall away from the one whole truth, never become error. So it isn't really that error is a departure from truth. It never was part of truth. And down there, 287, how can there be more than all? And at the bottom, this topic is continuing all down that page. At the bottom now, the statement you see, and this is so crucial, that truth is real, includes the statement that error, truth's unlikeness, is unreal. You can't have both. Truth is real, error, truth's unlikeness is unreal, is equally a true statement, and it's one true statement that, and both parts are needed. Because there seems to be a warfare between truth and error going on. But if we will take that statement and understand that statement, then, coming down to line 10, there will come the final physical and moral effects of Christian Science. When that statement is understood, we will have the final physical and moral effects of Christian Science, and the conflict between truth and error will cease, and harmony will reign, and there will be a rest to the people of God. But that rest will be active, because that action is inexhaustible, and we're always resting in action. And therefore, now says the text, there's no death. There is no death. The stones, you see where we are, line 20, the stones that comprise the temple that is the body of Christian Science can never, as Jesus said of the material temple, be thrown down so that there isn't one stone left standing upon another. If the stones of the temple are thrown down, you'd get debris, wouldn't you? Well, that's fallen man, debris. And on the top of the next page, it's spoken of as the temporal debris. We haven't quite finished with 288, though. These stones can never be thrown down, the stones of the true temple. Temple is temporal, you see, temple, tempus, time, debris, it's all that. Because the temple of Christian Science, if you notice the terms in that paragraph, the body of God, which is man, is intact. You see, it's five chief stones countering the evidence of the five senses as to fallen man are that life is soul, life is spirit, therefore life is deathless, and therefore man has no birth, no material life, no death. The text is warming up to the tremendous passage on the utter nothingness of death. And so at the bottom of 288 we have in the margin the Christ element. Well, what is the Christ element which made the Messiah, the way-shower, truth and life? What is the Christ element that shows the way of truth and life? It's the element of individuality, deathless individuality or indivisibility. That's the Christ element, the element of individuality as indivisibility. That's the way, shows the way of truth, which is wholeness, and of life, which is deathless. And so the text is all now on the subject of the nothingness of death. Truth demonstrated on top of 289 is eternal life. When you don't have truth fragmented, you have it as life eternal. And all the way down that page, we are being shown, you see the term standing out there, truth and life, they're showing the way of the nothingness of death. Life and life's idea, truth and truth's idea, what's life's idea? Little L, life, little L. And truth's idea, truth, little t, they never make man sick, sinful, or mortal. And so this Christ, with its element of indivisibility or truth, proves the King of Terrors to be nothing and destroys it with the spiritual evidences of life. For to the real man and the real universe, there's no death process. Life is not in matter, on line 27. Therefore, it can't be said to pass out of matter. It's never been put into matter. How the dickens can it pass out of matter? Life is God, on line 32. Life is eternal. Our life, little L, is life, capital L, eternal, self-existent. It's the everlasting I am. It's being with a capital B. who was and is and shall be, whom nothing can erase. That's the Mount of Transfiguration, all right, isn't it? Yes, it really is. It's the contemporaneousness of all being in being, that is, in life. One I am. And so nothing is gained by dying, except perhaps awakening to the fact that you're not dead. That's all. The only thing that's gained by dying is you wake the fact that you're not dead. But death in the margin there is of no advantage. And to the spiritual class, line 13, 14, relates a scripture on such, the second death hath no power. What are the spiritual class? What can the spiritual class be other than thought that comes out from its source? Spiritual, constituted of spirit, born of spirit, therefore on such there is no death. As we come out from, that's birthless in the material sense, and therefore return to, that's deathless. So he comes from life and returns to life, man. And this is his perfection in that next paragraph. And there's no sin, and therefore no death, because he is sinless when he comes out from his source. That constitutes his sinlessness, never to be separate from his source. And that's no material birth, no departure, and therefore no death. And this is why at the top of 291, death does not free the body from sin, but life does. And to make it all real and practical, we have to see that the only thing that frees the body from sin is to obey each trumpet call of wisdom at the top of 291, each trumpet call of wisdom regarding the growth of Christian character until the last trump sounds. The last trump will sound. You see that? And this last trump will be when you and I, as man, are found having no righteousness of our own, no anything of our own, no life of our own, no body of our own, no mind of our own, no ego of our own, no anything of our own, because it all belongs to God and is all ours by reflection. And therefore, in possession of the mind of the Lord, as the scripture says. That's Christian character. That is Christian character, to be in possession and to be possessed by the mind of the Lord, which would make that mind a capital, of course. So, wisdom, you see, the wisdom to handle the serpent, the wisdom of divine metaphysics to reverse sense evidence, not to believe you can have both, and to choose to have the real. That's wisdom. And this judgment day of wisdom comes hourly and continually, by which mortal man is divested of all material error. That's wisdom, using the rule of inversion, isn't it, in divine metaphysics. Because certainly there's no resurrection from the grave awaiting life or mind. That's too ridiculous. So over to 292, and the last mortal fault will be destroyed. And then the trump will sound. The last mortal character fault will be destroyed. Isn't that marvelous? The last mortal character fault will be destroyed. And then the trump will sound, which will end the battle of truth with error and mortality. But nobody knows when that will be. And so prophecy, which is a thing looking forward into the future, oh gosh, when is it going to be? When is it going to be? Prophecy has to pause, and you have to take up divine science. Only my Father knows. And what my Father knows is divine science. And divine science encompasses the heights and depths of being, and it's nothing to do with the future at all, and reveals the infinite. So the truth bees to us the resurrection and the life. Truth will be to us the resurrection and the life. Yes, that's my Father, you see, that divine science which knows all things, the all-knowing. Whereas your Father, the Father of mortal mind and material man, is the devil. And the lust of your Father ye will do. He's a murderer from the beginning, and there's no truth in him. He's just the liar and the lie itself. And therefore, now come down to the bottom of this page, Jesus brought something to light, you see, and what he brought to light was man's indissoluble connection with the infinite, with his infinite source. He saw man plugged into the mains of mind, of life, and never could he be unplugged. And therefore we come to the colossal subject of electricity as the counterfeit of the flow of life when man is plugged into life. And that's the real essence of manhood at the bottom of 292, in contrast to this essence of matter, which is electricity. Electricity, elementary matter, the material gases and forces, and the outcome of that, which is earthquake, wind, wave, lightning, fire, bestial ferocity, is all the counterfeit of the spiritual forces of mind, whose potency, whose power is truth, whose attraction is love, and where everything adheres and coheres with everything else in life and as life. Extraordinary, this dissertation on electricity and these seeming forces. See, the vital fluid, of course, is, as we say, life itself, the flow of life itself. Electricity doesn't form. It does seem to. It seems to form the link between matter and mortal mind, but it certainly doesn't form any link between matter and mind, capital M. See, if you take these gases, gas, if you hold it in a container, it doesn't like it. Doesn't like it at all, because it's subject to the pressures and the forces exerted on it by this container. And if you put man into a mortal body, if he's contained and subject to the pressures of mortal body, he doesn't like it at all. He wants to escape. And this is the thing about gas. It escapes. It wants to escape and fill the whole atmosphere. And therefore it's a symbol of mind. The gases. And is a symbol of mind which can't bear to be contained or suppressed or pressurized. And it's the same with man and mortal body, therefore. You see, electricity is either static, it has two forms, it's either static, that is to say it's at rest, or else it's dynamic, it flows in a current through a conductor. You see, we're not really left that thing of inertia, where everything is truly at rest and yet is always flowing. And the rule of inversion will take hold of electricity and use it and come back to mind and to life as that which is forever at rest, but forever flowing. And you can't kill it, you can't destroy it, and it can't destroy itself. So the positively charged atomic protons and the negatively charged atomic electrons, they're all at the back of these counterfeit material gases and forces resulting in these vapid fury things. Counterfeit forces. Self-destroying. And what they point to under the rule of inversion is the strength and permanency of spirit. So, coming over, then it isn't just a question of electrical flow in matter, but biologically the thing that is counterfeit is the electrical nerve flow in the body. The rule of inversion inverts it all, and we see life as the one flow. Because this matter thing, this nerve business with its pain and its pleasures, is all myth. All myth on 294.22. And belief, it's just belief, which is the father of mythology, says the text. And you seem to get matter divided into intelligent gods. But the science of mind corrects all those false mistakes, those falsities and mistakes. And over to 295, where God is governing his own universe or his own body, and everything in this body is absolutely obedient to the mind of the body, this one intelligence or mind. And down on 295, this extraordinarily helpful in paragraph, starting line 16, because man is neither a wall, an opaque wall, nor is he a window pane through which the light shines, but man is the light itself. I am the light of the world, Jesus would say. And therefore, brainology, which would seem to get make him a medium through which the light shines, instead of being the light itself, brainology is likewise a myth. But don't make any mistake, says the text. This thought, when you see that you are the light emanating from its source, that the impact of that light on the belief of being a mortal increasingly makes that mortal a better and better transparency. Just because you are the light, don't evade that second issue, for goodness sake, or you'll never solve the problem. There must be progress humanly, 296, line 4. There must be the ripening of mortal man. The mortal's got to be dropped for the immortal. The old man with his deeds has got to be put off in order that there shall be life. The bottom of the page there, an improved belief, yes, only one step out of error, but it aids in taking the next step and in understanding the situation in Christian science, which is that you are the light and not the window pane, and certainly not the wall. All this now, for quite a little way, is on the absolute necessity for mortal improvement. The need to improve, become a better mortally speaking, humanly speaking, become a better and better transparency for the light. But you'll only do that when you realize that you are not a transparency, you're the light. And then gradually the problem of dualism is solved. And there is regeneration for us. And so over to 297, and you see it continues in the middle there with this need for self-improvement. You see the thing that's happening as we see that we are the light and the effect of that light upon the human situation? It's the two translations at work that you got in the sixth chapter, which on this Christ parallel here is adjacent to the Science of Being chapter where we are now, isn't it? Yes? It's the two translations at work. When man is the light, that's the first translation. When the impact of that, making him a better and better transparency in order to solve the problem of being, that's the second translation at work. And the two are hand in hand. And therefore the text now is dealing with that. Faith, higher and more spiritual than belief, faith is second degree in the second translation, this chrysalis state of human thought. Truth becoming understood, gosh, I'm the light. That's third degree. But belief is the wall, first degree. And so it's essential that belief becomes faith and faith becomes spiritual understanding. They're the three degrees for human thought to have any relation to the actual or the divine in order to know that I am the light. And just as the senses, sickness, sin and death are the vague realities, it says there, of human conclusions, so life, truth, and love are the realities of divine science. Back with life, truth, and love, because that's what the light is as it comes forth from its principle through the first translation. It's life, truth, love. That's the light itself. And man is the light. And these dawn, you see, the light dawns in faith in the second degree, but they glow full-orbed in spiritual understanding in the third degree. In the third degree, I know that I am the light and not the window pane, and certainly not the wall. So you get this life, truth, and love as the flow of the true current. Life flowing direct from its source. See, we haven't left really the topic of electricity, we're simply translating it. It's the flow of the direct current as against this alternating current, or the human belief on line 16, alternating between a sense of pleasure and pain, hope and fear, etc. Alternating current. Whereas with the two translations, what we have is the complete circuit of the direct current, which is the flow of life itself. And it's not the flow of electricity, it's not the flow of nerve vibrations as we come down to the bottom of 298, it's the flow of God's angels. It's the angels, pure thoughts from God, the flow of the angel thoughts, winged with truth and love. You remember when it said God's thoughts are life itself? Every thought which is a thought of life is winged, must have for its wings truth and love. Otherwise it wouldn't fly and it wouldn't be life. Unless it were winged with truth, no departure, love, all-inclusive, that makes it life. And so these angel thoughts, God's thoughts, flowing on wings of truth and love, from the principle to the principle, angelic messengers to 99. They come to the sepulchre from, as the light, from their principle. As soon as they touch the sepulchre, they point back to where they came from. And so, upward soaring, they are, 299.12, guiding to where they came from, namely the principle of all good, whither every individuality, image or likeness of God, gathers. It's all in science at the bottom of the page there, the sunshine of truth itself melting away the dirt on the window pane, until all there is to the window pane is the pure reflection of the light itself. The first translation, you feel the action of the two translations here working so absolutely indispensably. And over to the 300, what we are dealing with, therefore, is the scientific statement as to man. That's right. What is the scientific statement as to man that can be proved, that's bringing to light the real man who is the new man? The scientific statement as to man is that man is reflection. He owns nothing of himself, but he reflects all. And this is the new man. It's the great topic now is that man is reflection. Reflection on line 5, man reflecting the divine likeness, line 21, the divine reflection in the marginal heading, God's representative. Of course, what is God's representative? Could only be his reflection. The sun seen in the ray of light that goes out from it. God is seen in spiritual man. Revealed in what reflects life, truth, and love. That's where we see God, in the reflection. When we reflect, are the reflection of life, truth, and love. And you can see down there, these capitalized and uncapitalized terms all the way along. Capitalized soul, spirit, mind, but uncapitalized soul, spirit, intelligence. And of course, the two are one. Reflect, meaning to bend back upon itself. God reflects upon himself. The reflex image is man. And reflection isn't insubstantial. It isn't waffly-waffly. It's substantial. It's the substantiality of reflection that the topic that the text now deals with. Man as reflection is substantial. He has by reflection the substance of spirit. He has by reflection one mind. And this means to say that he lives with the bottom of 301 now. He lives within the focal distance and never outside it of infinite spirit. Within the focal distance, never outside. If he were outside, he'd be turned upside down. He'd be inverted. You see on line 20, 29. But he is within and never outside. He's never subject to external forces. Oh, isn't it marvelous? You see that everything is everywhere. Not like a gas that you can shut up in a container. Everything of reality is everywhere present all at once. Soul is not compassed by finiteness. Principle is not found in fragmentary ideas. Gosh, how marvelous. And therefore it is on 302 that identity is not lost. No, identity is being found as reflection. We are finding identity in terms of reflection, and that reflection is changeless. Man, by reflection, has all that God is. And it's man as reflection on line 14 that is being defined. This is the science of our being, that our soul or mind is the divine principle of all the being there is. And the topic at the bottom there seems to return to something we touched on before, namely spiritual reproduction, when it was a question of like, always reproducing like. Reproduction, the idea as the idea, as reflection, we are always reproducing God. Every moment is a new reproduction of what God is. Every moment. And it's but the reflection of the creative power of the divine principle. The reflection through multitudinous, the reflection of the multitudinous forms that people, it's the truth about people, that people, the realm of the real. It's the multiplication of God's children. The ceaseless reproduction of God, which is what I am, what you are, what we are, moment by moment, always new, always fresh, always new children, new ideas. And it's the minutiae of lesser individualities always appearing, reflecting the One. They're always reflections of the One divine individuality. And the axe is being laid, therefore, at the vanity of the ages, which is that life or mind is formed by a material body. That's false reproduction, and it's the vanity of the ages. Whereas science itself is the beatified understanding of the science of life. And so, there's no separation. There's no alienation of the idea from its principle, of life from life, or anything like that, from the sweet sense and presence, to 304, of life and truth. No alienation from that which is indivisible, namely life, and therefore that which is whole and no departure, namely truth. And so, thirdly, in the margin there, man inseparable from love. Neither life, neither death nor life, nor anything shall be able to separate us from the love of God, because divine love, the love of God, little l, it isn't your love, your personal love, it's God's love with which you love. It's God's love, little l, which is love, capital L, is that wherewith you love and I love. Love, divine love, cannot be deprived of its manifestation or object. And this is the perfect man governed by his principle. Harmony. Harmony in man as beautiful as in music and discord unreal. Just as the science of music governs tones, so the science of being must govern life. And the harmony of life, in order that we be man. And over to 305, where it continues with this theme of reflection. Man, in the likeness of his maker, reflects the central light of being, the invisible God. This invisible God has to be made visible, not to material sense, but made visible in terms of his reflection. Man as reflection is God made visible. Isn't it so? And this constitutes, says the text, the underlying reality of reflection. The Son can do nothing of himself. This is reflection. But what he seeth the Father do, for whatsoever things he doeth, these doeth the Son likewise. And the inverted images are reversed by using the rule of inversion. Man is reflection. He's not subject to birth, growth, maturity, and decay. And the whole thing is resurrection. That's what it all amounts to. To be reflection is to be resurrected. In the measure that we are reflected, we are reflection, we are resurrection. In the measure that we are reflection, we are resurrected, and only in that measure. And so don't let us reason falsely about the resurrection as did the Sadducees and the Pharisees, who tried to raise the Pharisees anyway, raise the spiritual from the material. No, Jesus says, the only thing is to overcome death with spiritual life. Why? Because like always produces like. And therefore life demonstrates life. And because it's identical with itself, what it demonstrates, therefore life is soul. Isn't it? So the immortality of soul makes man immortal. That's why life is soul, because what it demonstrates is identical with itself. And so you get this life and soul, life or soul. They're never separated and from the representative man. Man cannot be separated for an instant from God because he reflects God. And so what you get as you come down that page on line 23 is that everything is a soul-created form instead of a sex-created form. That life is made up of soul-created forms, not sex-created forms. If it's made up of sex-created forms, it'll be death. But it has to be soul-created forms in which subject and object are always one and never separate. And that one with their infinite source. And that's the opposite of sex-created forms. See, man, God's man on line 30, spiritually created, is what? He's soul-created. He's not sex-created. Therefore, his life is permanent. And you can see what the text is leading to. It must lead to this whole problem of Adam and his sex creation. In contrast to what we've been learning about all through these pages, namely soul-created forms being forms of life instead of the Adam sex forms being forms of death. And therefore, we'll conveniently stop it at that point, and next time pick it up at the bottom of 306, which is where we get this series of Bible personages illustrating the workings in your and my life of all that we've been learning about through the first 38, whatever it is, pages of this chapter, until we can stand together on the platform right at the end of the book. All right, we leave it at that for today.
End of recording on this tape.